Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at offbeatoregon.com, and this is the Offbeat Oregon History Podcast, which every weekday brings you another story from the archives of the Offbeat Oregon History syndicated newspaper column. Thank you for loading me down and queuing me up, and I hope you enjoy the show. In 1881, the steamboat monopoly that was running everything on the Columbia River pulled a clever coup that they thought would be a great idea, but it ended up costing them plenty. Buying the connecting boat put a competitor out of business, but left him free to use his boat to eat their lunch on an even more lucrative steamboat route. And this wasn't just any competitor either. This was the one that had eaten their lunch about 3 or 4 years before. You would have thought they'd be more careful. This story was first published on October 30th of 2011. Here we go. The executives in charge of Henry Villard's Oregon Railway Navigation Company no doubt thought they'd been very clever when they bought the Sternwheeler Gold Dust in 1881. They could not have been more wrong. ORN, formerly known as the Oregon Steam Navigation Company, or OSN, owned mostly all the steamboats on the Columbia River, and its rates were set accordingly. But it's tough to enforce a monopoly running on a public resource like the Columbia River. Here and there will be still a few independents. These would compete with OSN boats, driving down the prices for passengers and freight, and therefore hurting profits. In 1881, there were two such boats that were particularly annoying for the big company. Captain Uriah B. Scott's propeller-driven steamboat Fleetwood, and Captain Ernest Spence's pint-sized Sternwheeler Gold Dust. The Fleetwood brought passengers from Portland to the bottom of the Cascade Rapids, where the Cascade Locks would be built a few years later, and the Gold Dust picked them up from there and carried them on to the Dalles. By snapping up the Gold Dust, ORN had put both competitors out of business. There was nothing at the Cascades, just a couple ferry docks and a portage road. Nobody was going to book passage to the Cascades if he or she would be unable to continue on to the Dalles, right? You might think, you know, theoretically, one could take the Fleetwood to the Cascades, save a little bit of money there, and then transfer onto an ORN boat to continue to the Dalles. One could do that is, if the Sherman Antitrust Act hadn't been several dozen years in the future. In 1881, there was nothing to prevent ORN from refusing to serve people who had taken passage to the Cascades on a competitor's boat. So they did exactly that, and nobody was going to book passage to the Cascades if he or she would be unable to continue to the Dalles, right? Right. Scott, the sole remaining independent boat captain, found himself running a line for which there was no market. What to do? It's not clear what ORN thought he would do. Maybe they didn't think beyond just scoring this point, but what they should have thought about was the Fleetwood itself. Scott had designed the Fleetwood himself, and Scott was a gifted naval architect, probably the best designer of steamboat hulls in Oregon history. This was the fellow who'd eaten the lunch of the Willamette River Steamboat Monopoly, the People's Transportation Company, several years before, and done it with the Ohio, a boat so crude and ugly that it had made him an object of ridicule, until he launched it and they realized it could haul freight in water less than a foot deep. Now he'd built a boat for the Columbia, and done it in typical Scott style, in an unconventional way. He'd built it with a propeller drive instead of the more traditional sternwheel configuration. It was big, it was luxurious, and it was fast. Oh yes, this one was definitely built for speed and for deep water. In fact, it was built to cost ORN a lot of money in lost sales. But Scott appears to have made a mistake by putting it on the Cascades run, which he may have done as a favor to help his friend and fellow Ohioan, that would be Captain Spencer. By forcing Scott to move the Fleetwood, ORN gave him the opportunity to correct that mistake without leaving Spencer high and dry. And correct it, he did. Soon the Fleetwood was making the run from Portland to Astoria. This was a run for which ORN charged passengers $5, this at a time when many working Oregonians made less than $5 in a month. Scott priced his service at $2. Crickets started chirping in the Oregon Railway Navigation ticket booth. Not only was the Fleetwood far cheaper than the competition, it was more luxuriously appointed and considerably faster. Passengers shaved several hours off their travel time by choosing Scott's boat. In fact, Scott probably could have charged $6 a head and still packed him in because the Fleetwood represented a premium service. The competitors settled into a new equilibrium on the lower river, in which ORN was for once the junior player. The erstwhile monopoly had to console itself by squeezing the farmers and traders who still rode his boats and trains back and forth from the Dalles and points east, a line along which ORN controlled all the portage routes and railroads and therefore couldn't really be challenged. But the Portland to Astoria route was the biggest and most profitable direct run on the river, and ORN probably found itself wishing that it had left Scott alone on his Cascades run. Scott subsequently formed a company called the Columbia River and Puget Sound Navigation Company, expanding to provide service in the Seattle-Tacoma area as well. It was a very successful company, and as the era of the sternwheel riverboat came to an end, it operated the most famous riverboat on the Columbia, the enormous, plush, and speedy Bailey Gatzert, known to those who found its wake excessive and annoying as the Daily Bastard, which was the only Oregon riverboat that actually has had a piece of music written for it. The Bailey Gatzert made its last run in 1917, by which time the Columbia River sternwheeler era was definitely over and had been for several years, replaced by freight and passenger service on the rails. Well, that's today's story. And before I cue up the outro, I just want to remind you that I've got a live history show coming up at the Jack London Bar in Portland, corner of 4th and Alder Streets in the basement of the Rialto Pool Room, and that's on Tuesday, August 6th. I do these the first Tuesday of every month. The subject this time is going to be the rise and fall of the Ku Klux Klan in Oregon in general and Portland in particular. It's free. It lasts about an hour. It starts at 7:30. I hope you can make it. For more details of it, I've set up a redirect page at offbeatoregon.com/Jack London, which will take you to the Facebook invitation page. Hope to see you there. Well, that's it for our show for today. This show is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. In addition to this podcast, it includes a weekly newspaper column, a daily RSS feed to catch on your smartphone reader, a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, and a couple other minor components. Photographs and other images that go with today's show are on offbeatoregon.com, where you'll also find full citations to the sources used in writing this story, along with more than 200 other articles written over the last 5 years, all organized by date of publication. This podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band, atlasstringband.com, and was written by Carmen Ficarra. I do Offbeat Oregon for learning and for fun, so I don't sell advertising or ask for donations, but if you feel a need to make a donation anyway, may I suggest that you buy a copy of my book instead? It's called Wicked Portland, The Wild and Lusty Underworld of a Frontier Seaport Town, published by the History Press in 2012. You can order it from the store link on offbeatoregon.com if you'd like, but if you still have a local community bookstore in your town, I hope you'll consider buying it from them instead. It sells for $20. Finally, if you're ever in Corvallis, drop me a line. Maybe we can grab a cup of coffee and talk about history. I'm at finn@offbeatoregon.com. Don't be a stranger, especially don't be a stranger if you have a good idea for one of these columns in the future. Speaking of the future, our next show will be coming your way at around 6 a.m. tomorrow morning. And until then, go out and fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.